Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Happy Monday, everybody. This is the AmeriChicks. I'm Molly Vogt.
And I'm Kim Munson.
and we are so excited to be here with you every Monday to Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. while you are driving home. Hopefully it's a good drive for you today. It's kind of a sad day today, Kimmy. Obviously, everybody's probably heard, but there was a terrible shooting in Las Vegas last night about 10 o'clock at the Jason Aldean concert. I woke up this morning just kind of feeling a little bit like 9/11 2001. Obviously, it's not 3,000 people, but I think it's up to about 58 people that have died so far. There were about 22,000 people in attendance at this concert, something like, I mean, a huge, huge number. And the crazy thing is that it was in this area, like in a field where there was nothing on top of them, no protection, and somebody was just shooting out the window.
Yeah, we don't know for sure what was going on with this guy. There's preliminary reports. Don't really want to, you know, make a comment on that right now. 65-year-old guy. These people in this concert were just sitting ducks.
Yeah.
And so we'll have to see what's really going on. If the guy was crazy or, you know, just, I mean, obviously something weird was going on. But it's really, really sad. Apparently there's stories of heroism like there always is in these tragedies. I mean, this would be like a war zone. It's just absolutely unbelievable. And I think President Trump called it what it is. It is evil. There is something really, really evil about taking another person's life like this. And it's just really sad. Our hearts go out to all of the people that have been injured. Of course, those that are mourning those. I mean, just think about it, Molly. Yesterday morning, all these people were alive. This morning, they're not because of some evil act by a crazy gunman.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, like you said, there are certain stories of heroism, and I've seen things on Twitter and on the news of people that were just, you know, rushing in to help others, and they weren't really protecting themselves. They were rushing to help others, and that's what a leader is. We talk about that a lot, is, you know, somebody who gives their life for somebody else. I was reading about Sonny Melton. He's a 29-year-old guy. He died saving his wife from the gunshots. He put his body over hers, and he took them, and she lived. And it's just, you know, life is so short, and it's really, we need to cherish it, and we need to make sure that we're always reaching out to our loved ones, and don't hold a grudge too long.
Well, they say that every day is a gift. That's why we call it the present.
Yes, yes, that's true. And you know, we don't have all the details yet to say, you know, was Stephen Craig Paddock, did he do this on his own or not? But I've seen some interviews where there's a girl saying that there was a woman in the audience who was telling them in advance, you're all going to die. You're all going to die.
And really?
Yeah. And so I don't know if that's true or not. We'll have to wait and see. But there may have been some sort of a coordinated effort here. It may not have been just one person.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to find out what's going on. Apparently the guy had no previous record. There was no reason that he would have been on the police radar. You know, it's just a real head scratcher right now, but I'm sure that we will get to the bottom of it here soon.
Yeah. So hearts and prayers, our thoughts and prayers go out to everybody in Vegas. And another thing, Tom Petty died today.
Oh, I saw that he was going to the hospital. I didn't realize that had happened.
Cardiac arrest, 66 years old. So wow. I love that song, Free Fall, and I just wanted to give a shout out to Tom Petty.
Wow.
So let's get to more positive news. You know, Denver's Money Talk Radio, we want to help you kind of understand how policies affect your finances.
And that's the positive part.
That's the positive part. We want you to be able to protect your finances. And in order to do that, you need to know, you know, what's going on around here. So, and what's the right of the government? What rights do they have? So in the second segment, we are going to be on the phone with Rob Nadelson. He is an originalist as far as the Constitution is concerned. And he is going to break down for us what our founding fathers were thinking and what did they intend when they actually put into place Congress's taxing power when they listed it. What did it mean? What is the difference between a tax, a direct tax, a duty, an imposed excise, and, you know, all these different things. And but before we get to that, we figured it'd be a good place to start. Today is the first day of the special session that Hickenlooper, Governor Hickenlooper, has called together. And basically, it, last session, our legislators passed Senate Bill
267,
which was actually not legally passed because you can't increase taxes on people to bring in revenue without going to a vote of the people in Colorado, according to Tabor. And they violated that and they passed it anyways. Unfortunately for them, it looks like they didn't write everything correctly into the bill and some special districts were left out. Now those special districts want to get paid. But a strange thing is those special districts are having to pay $75,000, I believe, for the special session, rather than it just waiting 3 months when they get into session in January.
Yeah, and that's very curious. And then Governor Hickenlooper had said that the entities that would benefit from this special session would be paying for that. That seems kind of like that's not the way it's supposed to work.
Right, right. So is there a special interest involved here? What's
Sounds
the
like
point?
It. Mm-hmm.
So we've asked Lori Bratton to call in and give us a little update because she's been on top of this. Hey, Lori, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kim and Molly, how are you?
We're good, thanks. How are you?
We're good. You know, we're sleuths for truth.
Yeah.
And I think you're doing some sleuthing right now.
And we want to know what you know.
So what's going on?
Well, so today down at the Colorado State Capitol, they had the special session. It was Monday, so they started at 10. Tomorrow morning, they'll start at 9 a.m. And I want to let you and your listeners know that you can watch that live. Go to the Colorado General Assembly website. But so today they started this bill to allegedly fix the unfixable Bill 267. And they started two versions. They started one in the Senate chamber and then they started one in the House chamber. And the reason they do that is the Republicans have the majority in the Senate and the House members have the majority in, or the Democrats have the majority in the House.
Okay, so then go ahead. What happened today?
So they started the bill in the Democrats started the bill in the Senate, and the Senate majority or the president of the Senate sent that to the Transportation Committee, and the Republicans in the Senate Transportation Committee said, no, I'm sorry, that we can wait 3 more months for this. And they postponed the bill indefinitely, which in layman's terms means they killed it. It's not exactly right, but basically they killed the bill.
So, Lori, do you happen to remember which Republicans sit on that Transportation Committee?
You know, I think Randy Baumgartner is the chair of that committee, but yeah, I'd have to look that up because I actually was listening to it on the House side.
Okay.
So the Democrats control the House and they in the Colorado legislature, and they sent it to House Finance. So in House Finance, they heard, you know, they listened to the bill and they did pass it in committee. So then it went to the House floor in seconds. And I'm looking to see if I, because I know I listed everybody who was on it in the House, but I'm not seeing that right now. So anyway, they sent that. So then since it was passed in the House committee, it went to the House floor. There was one Republican, Dan Thurlow, who voted with the Democrats to pass that bill, but all the rest of the Republicans, 4 Republicans voted against it, but the majority sent it to the House floor. They voted on that in seconds, which is just a voice vote. So it passed seconds. Tomorrow morning, shortly after 9 a.m., they will vote on it in House thirds. That will be a recorded vote. If it passes, which I expect that it will, then that bill will go on over to the Senate, where I expect it will meet the same fate as the Senate version met today.
So then basically, Lori, this is going to die. It's not going to be passed. Is that what you're saying exactly?
My hope is that it will die because the majority of the Senate and House and Senate Republicans by far think this is an unconstitutional, it's a violation of the Constitution.
Well, it is.
It's violating Tabor. It's raising taxes without a vote of the people. And, you know, one thing that was very disturbing to me is I live right on the Highlands Ranch Lone Tree border. And so, you know, when I'm listening to testimony, I'm listening to people in committee, you know, come in and testify for and against this bill. And the mayor of Lone Tree, who is allegedly Republican, Jackie, what's her last name?
Millay. In fact, she introduces herself as a conservative Republican.
No. She has twice this session has come in and voted and asked her legislators to violate Tabor and increase taxes without a vote of the people. She testified for this bill today, saying that Lone Tree needs more money for its art center. I mean, if you're living in Lamar or you're living in Cortez or you're living in Sterling, why should you be paying for wealthy Lone Tree's arts center and paying for RTD money that benefits the Front Range?
You know,
it's shocking.
Wow, Lori, and I don't know if people go up and down Lincoln, but there is a big bridge with a big leaf. It's crossing Lincoln, and it's a pedestrian bridge. And that baby's costing $7 million. Just think how much could be done with $7 million. And Lone Tree put $3.5 million into that, which was well over $250 per resident in Lone Tree. And now we have a quote-unquote conservative Republican down at the legislature asking for money on Senate Bill 267.
That's shocking.
Okay, Lori Bratton.
It's shocking.
Okay, thanks so much, Lori. We appreciate you weighing in on this.
And we want to know more tomorrow. Keep an eye on it. Thank you.
I'll be listening. Thanks, ladies.
We'll be right back.
If you're a veteran looking to purchase a home, choose the local experts, Kim Sturtz and Mark Cook at Home Mortgage Alliance. VA loans offer qualifying veterans the option to buy without a down payment. And since these loans are government insured, limited closing fees. Active duty military, reserves, National Guard, retired military, and surviving spouses may qualify. Give Kim Sturtz or Mark Cook at Home Mortgage Alliance a call today at 303-888-2732. Or check them out on the AmeriChicks referral list at AmeriChicks.com. Home Mortgage Alliance LLC is an approved FHA lender and sponsored agent of VA loans. NMLS number 1137507. In America, we stand on the shoulders of giants. Benjamin Franklin and other founding fathers handed us a republic and challenged us to keep it. The challenge remains today, more than 240 years later. The AmeriChicks invite you to call in every weekday afternoon at 5 p.m. to sort through the smoke and mirrors to discuss government policies as right versus wrong rather than right versus left. Denver's only female-hosted call-in talk show on your drive home. The AmeriChicks, Kim Monson and Molly Vogt, sponsored by Yanni's in the Landmark for the best lamb chops in town. Weekday afternoons at 5 on KDMT, Denver's Money Talk, 1690 AM.
Bookkeeping, accounting, and taxes, oh my! No need to worry about your company or personal finances with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company are certified public accountants who offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company strives to take a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs and situation. Give Predovich & Company a call at 303-791-3000 or check out their website at dpredovich.com and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
It's time. October is here, and the scary features are hitting the screen. Please join the historic 88 Drive-In Theater and be sure to bring someone to hold on to for their upcoming triple features. Admission at 88 Drive-In Theater is only $8 per person, and children under 12 are free. Your admission includes all features. Stay for one or all three. New fall box office hours are 6 p.m. Friday and Saturday and 6:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday. To stay up to date on movie showings and times, go to 88drivein.net and like the 88 Drive-In on Facebook. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back with the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson on KDMT. During that commercial break, you heard about the historic 88 Drive-In movie theater.
I did,
And they've got some movies right now I wanted to go ahead and share because we didn't list them in there because they change. We like to give them to you live. So right now, if you get down there, the Lego Ninja Go movie is at 7. The Hitman's Bodyguard is at 8:50 p.m. And then really, really scary, It. At 10:50 p.m. So it's perfect weather for it. It's getting nice and chilly. I mean, it's in the 40s, Kim. My goodness, it's going to start snowing soon. So get your family, get all bundled up, get your blankets, go down there and go to the drive-in and and have a good time.
Definitely. And Molly, this is going to be a great show. Rob Nadelson is going to be joining us here shortly. And just so people know, our website, AmeriChicks.com, there's all kinds of great information there. All of our past shows are archived there. So be sure and check that out. And that's where we are on Facebook and Twitter as well, is AmeriChicks.
Yep. And, you know, this is Denver's Money Talk Radio, and we're actually the only money talk in town. And we want to share just, you know, information with you, real honest to God truth about, you know, government's role and
what's
taxes
going on out
and
there,
finances,
yeah.
And how really they're allowed to are they allowed to take your money? How much? What kind of authority did we give them? Where did we give them that authority? And we gave them the authority in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1. We gave Congress the ability to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, excises, to pay the debts and provide for common defense and the general welfare of the U.S. But all of these taxes, etc., are supposed to be uniform throughout the United States. So we have asked Rob Nadelson to join us, and he joins us every month. You know him. He's a senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence. He's with the Independence Institute. He has done a lot of extensively research and teaching on the history and the legal meaning of the Constitution. He's been cited repeatedly at the U.S. Supreme Court by parties and justices because he knows, he's dug into what our founding fathers were thinking when they put the Constitution into place. And if you want to know what that should mean to us today, we have to look at what they said back then. So, Rob Nadelson, welcome to the AmeriChicks show.
It's good to be back, Molly and Kim. Kim and Molly.
Well, thanks for joining us. There's a lot going on here at the local level as far as taxation and the national level as well. And we figured we would just kind of love to start with you about our founding fathers' attitudes towards taxations. And you know, what did they originally mean when they put in the terms tax, direct tax, duty, impost, excise, all of these different terms? So do you mind just kind of give us a start wherever you want, and let's get started on what these terms meant.
Well, I will, Molly, except that I just wanted to make one comment, and that is that you said it's cold, it's in the 40s, it's going to be snowing soon. In Lakewood, where I am right now, there are, in fact, clumps of snow coming down. It's mostly still rain, but it's the first snow I've seen since spring.
Well, I am glad that you have decided to still call in and talk to us rather than get your galoshes on and get out there and make a snowman. Priorities. You got to have priorities.
Really, you know, that really was my priority. I got about half done, and then I decided to be on your show, and then I'll finish it up right after the show.
Awesome.
Okay. Okay, taxes. Taxes, as you know, were a big issue in the American Revolution, or rather they helped to bring about the American Revolution. The British Empire was an empire with a lot of different parts. There were just the 13 colonies we know about. There were a number of colonies in the West Indies. There was also Canada. Ireland was then part of the British Empire and so forth. And generally speaking, the British Parliament allowed those units of the empire to levy their own taxes. The Parliament controlled the trade among the units of the empire. It controlled trade with foreign governments or foreign peoples. It controlled foreign policy, but by and large, taxation was done locally. After the French and Indian War ended in 1763, some folks who were in control of Parliament decided to change that, and they decided they wanted to impose taxes in the colonies, and the colonies, at least the ones on the American mainland, started to push back and object to that. And in the course of it, pushing back, various colonial writers, most notably John Dickinson, but not just Dickinson, said, look, it's one thing to regulate trade, and even if you impose impositions on people, designed to regulate trade like a prohibitive tariff, we won't consider that a tax. But if government wants to raise money for the principal purpose of raising revenue, that's a tax. And so that definition, an imposition for the principal purpose of raising revenue, was really what the founders meant by tax, and that pretty much carried forward to the Constitution as well.
Okay, so Rob Nadelson, today when we talk about a tax, we say sin tax. Like, you know, you put an extra tax on cigarettes because they're trying to incentivize that people don't smoke cigarettes and on sodas and sugary drinks and different things like that. So that shouldn't be considered a tax then today, right? Because it's not raising revenue for the general welfare?
It would depend on whether it was imposed at a level that produces revenue. Here's an example. Suppose that the state government passes a law imposing a $1 million charge on every carton of cigarettes. Well, of course, nobody's going to buy cigarettes in the legal market under those circumstances, and the revenue from the tax is going to be zero. Everybody knows that. So that imposition is really not designed to raise revenue. It's designed to stop people from buying cigarettes. A more common example would be if we imposed a $100,000 tariff on every car imported from Japan. The purpose of it would be to stop the importation of cars from Japan. That would be considered a regulation of commerce, not a tax. On the other hand, if the government imposes a $5 imposition on, say, a carton of cigarettes, that is going to produce probably a fair amount of revenue. And that is a tax, even if one of its incidental purposes is to discourage sin. The founder generation didn't do that with tobacco that I recall, but they did it with alcohol a lot. They would impose excise taxes, basically consumption taxes, on alcohol, partly to raise money, maybe mostly to raise money, but also to get people to stop drinking so much.
So let's talk about the difference between the excises and the imposts.
Okay, we're going to get a little into the weeds here. An impost, as the Constitution uses the term, is a tax that is imposed when a good comes into the United States, when it is imported into the United States. The word impost actually isn't directly connected to the word import, but you can, as a mnemonic device, you can think of imposts imposed on imports. So that example I gave of a $5,000 tax imposed on every car imported in the United States, that's a good example of an impost. An excise, on the other hand, is a tax that's imposed on consumption within the country. In fact, it's sometimes even called an inland impost or an inland duty. A great example of an excise tax, which we pay every day, is a Colorado sales tax. It's a tax essentially on the consumption of goods. Technically, it's not a tax on the consumption of services. But when you go to your local clothes store and you buy a pair of shorts and you pay a tax on that, you're paying an excise.
Okay. And then our founding fathers, they talked about direct and indirect taxes. What's the difference between those?
Well, this gets a little squirrely because this was a topic that was addressed by the Supreme Court in 2012 when it upheld Obamacare. Remember that the court held that the penalty imposed on individuals for not buying insurance was a kind of tax.
Yep.
And then went on to hold that it was an indirect tax, not a direct tax. Actually, Molly and Kim, the court was wrong on both counts. But essentially, a direct tax, as the Constitution uses the term, is a tax on production and on living, on the ownership of property. For example, the classic direct tax is a real estate tax. You know, you write a tax every 6 months to your local government or to your local county on the house you own. That's an example of a direct tax. Another example of direct tax, which we don't use much in this country, is called a head tax, where every person, or at least every person meeting a certain description, has to write a check to the government maybe every year. I spent some time in Britain, and when I was there, I had to pay a head tax to the city of Oxford. It was called a council tax, and I had to pay it to myself, my wife, and my two kids. So that's a good example of a direct tax. But in addition, when the founders used the term direct tax, they also included taxes on businesses. They included income taxes, taxes on the interest that you might get from bonds. Taxes on occupations generally, like a business license tax, is a big sprawling category called direct taxes. Everything that wasn't a direct tax was an indirect tax. Excises, for example, imposts, which I discussed a minute ago, a duty, that is to say, for example, a tax you might have to pay for crossing a border, or one that you might have to pay for filing a document with the authorities. Those were indirect taxes. The boundary between direct and indirect wasn't always crystal clear, but in general, they knew which taxes were direct and which taxes were indirect.
Okay. Do you think that our founding fathers meant to tax us this much, as much as we're being taxed today?
Oh, no. No. You know, the founding fathers were great classicists. They were great advocates of, consumers of Greek and Roman literature. There's a famous saying about a tyrant who ruled a city in Sicily. And one example that was commonly given of how tyrannical this guy was is that he took 25% of his people's income in taxes. Of course, we're higher than that now. The founders provided in the Constitution that the Congress would have very broad taxing power because they recognized it might be necessary, for example, in cases of war. But they fully expected that in normal times of peace, the government would operate solely with indirect taxes. It would operate with customs duties, import duties, maybe an excise or two. They certainly never envisioned the massive use of individual income taxes and corporate income taxes and death taxes and so forth imposed by the federal government today. During the discussion of the Constitution, sometimes the anti-federalists, the opponents, said, hey, you know, this government has almost unlimited taxing power. And one of the responses from the advocates of the Constitution was, you know, it's just not going to be used like that. The federal government will be very limited in how much it takes of our wealth.
Oh, we always give people too much credit, don't we? Yeah, we got to get it in writing. This is the Americhicks. Molly and Kim, stick with us. We'll be right back with Rob Nadelson and taxes.
Dude, I need help. How can I perfect my golf swing and keep my promise to put in a whole new kitchen by next month?
No worries. Call Rafe and Colin at Harmony Ridge Construction. They've been doing this for 40 years all over the globe. Trust me, they'll make you look like a genius, and you'll have more time to perfect that golf swing. You really need to work on that.
Great. I'll give Harmony Ridge Construction a call today. What's their number?
720-660-0265. Or visit them online at harmonyridgeconstruction.com. They're best for any small fix or large remodel. They'll help you out.
Guy Whidden, 101st Airborne, landed Normandy in the dark on D-Day 1944, was knocked out on the jump, woke up, a gun to his head. What happened next? If you love the Americhicks World War II Project on Fridays and know a World War II vet, we'd love to share their story. We're in a race against time to gather as many stories as possible and as quickly as possible to preserve them for all future generations. So if you know a World War II vet or have that great World War II story to share, email us at americhicks@gmail.com. That's the americhicks@gmail.com.
And now, the Lens of Liberty. Here's Helen Creeble.
Does better nutrition have to mean fewer freedoms? Most of us are concerned when we hear of children not getting the nourishment they need. So it's understandable that we've adopted healthy standards for the food served in our schools. But if we first look through the lens of liberty, we would let parents decide what's best for their kids. Recent stories about school food police taking lovingly packed lunches away from children and forcing them to eat the school's pre-selected and mass-produced meals are shocking. Yet we tend to shrug these incidents off and do nothing about it. That is not the American way. Our nation is based on the idea that ordinary people can govern themselves and do not need the government to dictate such mundane details as what's for lunch.
The Lens of Liberty is brought to you by the Vernon K. Kriebel Foundation.
Hey, welcome back to the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. Check out our website, AmeriChicks.com. There's all kinds of great information there. All of our shows are archived there, and we are the AmeriChicks on Facebook and Twitter as well. And we are really excited. One of our Growing Our Brand partners, EvanYourITGuy.com, we've been talking about it, that they would be going live, and it is happening today, Molly. And that is really exciting. They are a network of IT professionals, and they will provide on-demand help with your computer needs. So check out EvanYourITGuy.com. And what's great about that is they certainly help individuals and small businesses. Small businesses, we're talking about taxes. We could add in rules, regulations, licensing, and all that. But they don't typically have a lot of cash for their IT needs. And so what's great about Evan, your IT guy, is you can hire them for just the amount of time that you need to get your problem solved. And it's a declining scale as far as the amount that you pay. The longer that you're on the line, the less that you pay. And so it's really a motivator for them to solve your problem as soon as possible. So that is EvanYourITGuy.com. They're going live today, which is really exciting. And be sure and check them out.
Absolutely. And they are hiring veterans. So if you're a veteran with IT skills, definitely reach out to them as well. And, you know, small businesses, it's tough out there. It's tough to get your business up and running. A lot of people, you don't have a lot of starting capital. And so you want to make sure that you're running as thin as possible. And with that said, Denver's Money Talk Radio, we are talking about taxes today with Rob Nadelson. So before you get back to you, Rob, I just wanted to share a Ronald Reagan quote because he had some good thoughts on this. Government's view of the economy could be summed up in a few short phrases. If it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. If it stops moving, subsidize it. Oh, boy, did they ever. But Rob Nadelson, you know, when our founding fathers were put together Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, giving Congress the power to lay and collect taxes, duty, imposts, and excises, they did it to pay the debts, provide for common defense and general welfare for the United States. I don't remember ever hearing that they were going to tax us as much as they humanly wanted so that they could sustain salaries for all politicians, as many as wanted to be politicians, in every program they wanted to run for the rest of our lives. Do you remember them saying
that? No, nothing like that. Molly, you, just before the break, you said maybe that the anti-federalists, the opponents of the Constitution, should have gotten it in writing that the federal government can't impose indirect taxes except can't impose direct taxes except in times of emergency. Actually, during the ratification process, several of the conventions, the state conventions that considered the Constitution, proposed a constitutional amendment that would say, the federal government shall not impose direct taxes unless there's, a war or some emergency like that. But that was an amendment like that ultimately was deemed unnecessary because the federal government is supposed to be limited to certain enumerated powers, certain lists of things it could do, and it can't do anything else. Mm-hmm. the huge tax burden that we federal tax burden that we labor under is due to the fact that the Supreme Court has allowed Congress to disregard the limits on its own power. I'll give you one example. Almost half of all the health care expenses in this country are paid directly or indirectly, mostly directly, by the federal government. When you add in other kinds of government expenditures, then the number goes up to around 65%. Now, we sometimes say that compared to, say, Great Britain, we have a free market medical system, but we don't. We have a medical system that's largely funded by the federal government, which explains why our costs are so high, but it also explains why our tax is so high. Is there any basis in the Constitution for the federal government to be paying at least half of the nation's health bills? No, there isn't. And if the federal government weren't doing that, if we handled those bills ourselves, not only would they'd be a lot cheaper, we would have a lot less bureaucracy, we'd have better care, and we'd have lower taxes.
And isn't it supposed to be for the general welfare? So it would really cover all of us, not just specific groups.
Well, that's actually a very good point. That phrase, the tax for the common defense and general welfare, was actually meant to be a limit on the taxing power. But what that means is when the government taxes, it must do so for the purpose of storing up revenue that can be used only for purposes for the entire country, not purposes for some region of the country, not purposes for some special interest. Here's a great example. When I was a constitutional law professor at the University of Montana School of Law, the dean conceived the idea that he wanted a new building for the law school. Wasn't necessary, in my view, but that's what he wanted. So he went to the alumni and he asked the alumni to contribute to this new building. Well, the alumni were no fools, and most of them refused, or many of them refused, to contribute to the new building. So what did the dean do? He went to one of the United States senators representing Montana at the time and said, "Hey, Conrad, can you get us some money for the law school?" And we got $1 million worth of federal money in order to build this building we didn't need. Now, that money came out of the salaries of secretaries and construction workers and clerks and policemen in places like Cleveland, Ohio, and Denver, Colorado, and Tucson, Arizona. And they were forced to contribute to the special interest cause of building a new law school in Missoula, Montana. That's exactly the kind of thing that general welfare clause was designed to stop. But the way the Supreme Court has interpreted it, they've made it a license instead of a restriction.
Rob, it's Kim here. This brings up the question regarding federalism. And the idea of federalism is that basically each of the states, had quite a bit of power, that the federal government would be limited. What we see now with different states, such as California, that is not watching their finances well, or like an Illinois or a New York, and these are big states, and they are deciding to do different things within their state regarding, health care or illegal aliens or, how they're spending their money, and they're getting themselves into a precarious financial situation. But I think the reason that they think that they can do that is then they can go to the federal government and, as you say, take money from that secretary in Tucson, Arizona, and that teacher in Denver, Colorado, and that construction worker in Montana and, extract taxes from them to then go via the federal government over to California. There's something that I think is inherently really wrong with that.
Yeah, the economists even have a name for it. It's called moral hazard, the idea of engaging in irresponsible conduct because somebody else is going to pick up the bill. That's one of the costs. It's a huge cost, too, that we have of not respecting the Constitution's limits on what the federal government can spend. Instead, Congress has become this huge auction house where members of where special interest groups bid with members of Congress to try to grab what they possibly can. It's one example why we need new fiscal restraints imposed by constitutional amendment on Congress. There's no question that some states are more readily engaging in risky behavior because of the possibility of a bailout. Let's turn, for example, to Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico, as you know, is a federal territory, but it's self-governing. And they have engaged in irresponsible financial policies for many, many years. They have huge unfunded liabilities and pensions, for example. Their utility company is a socialized company. It's a government company. And so naturally, when hurricanes hit, they have an old capital structure. They're not able to weather disasters the way private companies can. And now what's happening is that American taxpayers are being asked to bail out Puerto Rico because Puerto Rico has followed lousy socialist policies for so many years. So you're absolutely right, Kim. That's a That is a difficulty that you have when the limits on the ability of Congress to tax and spend are not respected.
Well, you know, Rob, we talk a lot about, you know, from a libertarian standpoint, about personal responsibility, you know, and that is it's a conservative principle. When we say conserve, we mean conserving the ideas that have really made America unique and great. So we talk about how important personal responsibility is on the individual level, but it's also, you just take it all the way up. You can take it to the city, to the county, to the state, and ultimately to the federal government. And this idea that different states are not taking personal responsibility for their decisions it does put us in a very precarious situation. So we have Rob Nadelson, constitutional scholar, author, on the line with us. We're talking about taxes. And Rob, I was just running through them: income tax, Social Security, Medicare, unemployment, workers' comp, sales tax, property tax, death tax. That's just a few of them. And so we have Rob Nadelson on the line. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back. This is the AmeriChicks.
In America, we stand on the shoulders of giants. Benjamin Franklin and other founding fathers handed us a republic and challenged us to keep it. The challenge remains today, more than 240 years later. The AmeriChicks invite you to call in every weekday afternoon at 5 p.m. to sort through the smoke and mirrors to discuss government policies as right versus wrong rather than right versus left. Denver's only female-hosted call-in talk show on your drive home. The AmeriChicks, Kim Monson and Molly Vogt, sponsored by Yanni's in the Landmark for the best lamb chops in town. Weekday afternoons at 5 on KDMT. Denver's Money Talk, 1690 AM.
Hey, if you like what you're hearing from the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, chances are your future clients do too. Let us help you promote your business and fatten up your wallet. To feature your business on the AmeriChicks program, email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. We feature the most topical news and intriguing guests every weekday during afternoon drive time, 5 to 6 p.m., while you and your clients are enjoying the program on your way home from work. So become a sponsor today by emailing the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. That's the AmeriChicks@gmail.com. Or visit us online at AmeriChicks.com. Today you need to have a great online and social media presence, and the best in the biz is Desi On Demand. The AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, personally work with Brandon, the founder of Desi On Demand. Desi On Demand is instrumental with our video projects, Chick Chat, Exceptional Endeavors, and our World War II project. We most heartily endorse his creativity, innovation, dedication, and integrity. Brandon and his team bring all that to the table. Check out Desi On Demand's website at mydesi.com or call 303-359-1522 for more info, and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
In a world of uncertainty, anything can happen. It pays to protect yourself, your family, your business, your home, and your car. And it pays to work with the proven professionals at Alliance Insurance Services. Jeremy McCallum and his Alliance Insurance Services team work with a variety of insurance companies competing for your business. Jeremy and the Alliance Insurance Services team helps you find the right insurance at the right price. They know you'll sleep better at night knowing Alliance Insurance Services is handling all of your insurance needs. Give them a call today at 303-431-9351. That's 303-431-9351. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Talking about money, honey. That's right. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. We are on the phone with Rob Nadelson. He is a scholar on the Constitution and what our founding fathers meant when they wrote it. And we're talking about taxes. What did they mean when they put together Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 that actually gave the power to Congress to collect taxes, duties, imposts, excises, but the purpose was supposed to provide for the common defense and general welfare of all the United States, not just specific groups. So, Rob, thanks for sticking with us for another segment and sharing a little bit more detail. Real quick, I want to make a point. So last segment, you said, you know, the Federalist were saying we did need to collect certain taxes, but it would be limited. We would only collect what we really needed. Obviously, after the Revolutionary War, we had war debt. We needed some money to come together to actually defend our country. They weren't going to try to take everything we had all the time. But you said the anti-federalists were saying, you've got to put that in writing. They will be run away. They will unlimitedly tax us. We're going to have a lot of taxes. But, you know, Rob, I've heard it also said that in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights should not have been added because that way they actually listed certain rights of the people, and that kind of limited us because the Constitution isn't supposed to limit us. It basically limits the government, and any power not given to the government was supposed to
not be theirs to take. So it's kind of on one hand, yeah, we should have written it down. On the other, should we not have?
Well, I think the Bill of Rights has been a success. I mean, I would not want to live in America today that didn't have a Bill of Rights, because the Congress has absorbed so much power that sometimes the only protection you've got is hiding behind an enumerated right. Arguably, the Bill of Rights maybe should have been a little longer. Obviously, the Supreme Court should have reached decisions different from what it did. But I think the Bill of Rights has been a net positive.
Okay. Well, obviously, we're waiting for Congress to pass some sort of tax reform. Hopefully, they'll do something that's helpful to all of us, not just to certain groups, like our current tax setup is for certain groups and certain industries and certain people that have connections good enough to be able to help them get around and get through the loopholes. So that's why taxes are important, and it's a good time to talk about them right now. Rob Nadelson, you wrote a paper and you made the case for the reason you were talking about, why the Constitution requires that direct taxes be apportioned among the states by population. Do you mind explaining what they meant there?
Yeah, sure. For those who might have just tuned in, direct taxes, as the Constitution uses the term, are taxes on living and production. So, you know, your income taxes are direct, taxes on property, head taxes, although we don't use those much, taxes on business profits, on interests, and so forth. So the one reason why the founders did not expect the federal government to use direct taxes very much is that they did require that if the government adopted a direct tax, that it be apportioned among the states. What that means is that each state would pay the same percentage of taxes as that state had of the American population. So if Montana has 1 million people and Colorado has 5 million people and a direct tax is imposed, then Colorado is going to pay five times as much as Montana, irrespective of what the wealth of the states might be. They did that in order to prevent some states from forming coalitions to plunder other states. Now, in 1913, however, the 16th Amendment was adopted, which said that as to income taxes, we're no longer going to require apportionment. And so that enabled the federal government to dispense with this difficult requirement of allocating the amount of revenue among the states by population and simply allow the federal government to say, you know, everybody pays 25% or everybody below a certain level pays this percent, and everybody above a certain level pays another percent, and so forth. So it became much easier to impose income taxes than it was under the old regime. But the original purpose of that apportionment requirement, which still does apply to other direct taxes, was to prevent some states forming a coalition in order to loot other states by imposing taxes on the losing state.
You know, Rob Nadelson, I really do not like the 16th Amendment because I think it flies in the face of the vision of the Declaration that all of us are created equal. And when you put in place a situation such as the progressive income tax, where some people don't pay anything and other people, you know, have to pay a significantly, you know, larger portion of their income, I think that's inherently unfair. And I think I think that everybody needs skin in the game for us to make good choices.
I think it's unfair. I think it's also economically destructive. The way to think about the progressive income tax or the graduated income tax is that it is a tax punitive with respect to income. So if you earn an additional dollar of income, you may pay 20 cents, but then if you earn another dollar beyond that, you have to pay 30 cents and so forth up. And there have been a lot of economic studies on the effect of taxes on people's welfare and on how prosperous the economy is. And from what I've seen, this system of the progressive income tax is one of the worst in terms of killing jobs and killing opportunity.
Well, yeah, really. So if you are more productive, if you create something that people want and they trade value for value, so you make more money, but then a bigger and bigger portion of that goes to government then what happens is the guy says, well, you know what? Do I need to work that extra hour, which creates value for people, or am I going to go home because the government's taking such a big portion? And ultimately, like you say, I think that it really stifles production and creativity. And I just don't quite understand how people don't understand that.
There's a slightly different way of looking at it, too. In a free market, the money you receive is a measure of how much people appreciate what you're doing. If people really appreciate what you're doing because you're turning out a really great product, let's say, they reward you with more income. So it's a measure in a free market of how much of a benefactor you are to society. What the progressive income tax does is it says the greater the benefactor you are to society, the more we're going to punish you by collecting taxes from you. So it's a destructive sort of system. Now, I'm not among those conservatives who say there's no role at all for the income tax. But I think a flat proportional income tax, you know, everybody pays 15% or whatever, I think it's eminently reasonable and eminently fair. But the idea of punishing people because they're more appreciated by their fellow man for what they do through the tax system just strikes me as not fair and certainly not a good idea for society.
Okay. Hey, Rob Nadelson, we've come to the end of our time. We are so pleased that you're going to be on once a month with us. So the next day will be Monday, November 6th. And we love that you are a standing guest for our show. So Rob Nadelson, thank you so much. And what is your website with all of your very informative writings?
Well, robnatelson.com, robnatelson.com. And I also have a book which is available through Amazon called The Original Constitution, What It Actually Said and Meant.
Oh, that's just awesome. So thank you so much, Rob Nadelson. We greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob.
And we're coming to the end of the show, and we have online with us Evie Zur, and she's got an event coming up that she wanted to share with you. Evie, how are you doing?
I'm just wonderful. Thank you for having me on.
Well, great. We got to you a little late. So
that's okay. 2017 is such a crucial crossroads for education in Douglas County that I'm here to announce an event called Keeping Douglas County Red, and it's happening this Friday, October 6th. And we want parents, teachers, neighbors, grandparents, everybody that is interested in excellence in education, they're all invited to join us for an Indian Summer TGIF Friday potluck on October 6th. That's this Friday. We're going to have the Elevate team of Randy, Ryan, Deborah, and Grant here to give you their vision for education in Douglas County. And these guys, recognizing the seriousness of this election, these four have stepped up to the plate to offer their expertise for excellence in education.
And
they don't know or have connection with the current board, but they're very passionate about education for us.
Now, Evie, how can people get more information about that, the event?
Well, they can go to my Facebook, Evelyn Zur. The invite is posted there. And I wanted to say that Tom Tancredo and Tony Sanchez are going to be special guests to introduce our Elevate team. Now, Tom is a passionate educator and a former history teacher. Tony is a former executive director of Freedom for Education and is a current Jeffco State Senate candidate for District 22. So we're planning for a big crowd, lots of parking behind my house. The time is 5:30 to 8:30. The place is in the Pinery, 5915 North Ponderosa Way. Bring a dish to share, wine or beer to share, doesn't matter. Come, mingle, have some fun, socialize, be ready to ask questions. There's no RSVP required. Just show up with something to share. And you can find more information on my Facebook page, Evelyn Zur.
Okay. Well, Evie, thank you so much for calling in. It sounds like that's going to be a really fun event. So
thanks,
that's this Friday, October 6th.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay. Thanks. Bye. So, boy, Molly, this it's a Monday, but a lot of information out there. You know, certainly, again, prayers for everyone affected by this shooting in Las Vegas, and certainly prayers for the family of Tom Petty.
Absolutely, for sure. And prayers for all of us and all of you out there. And we like to make sure that we're talking about issues. It's not Republican versus Democrat, right versus left. And, you know, it's not one ideology versus another. I think that, you know, let's come together. Let's talk about solutions. Let's respect each other as human beings. And then let's talk, brainstorm on ideas on how we can fix our problems rather than create more chaos and division.
Okay, and Calvin Coolidge said, a government which lays taxes on the people not required by urgent public necessity and sound public policy is not a protector of liberty, but an instrument of tyranny. It condemns the citizen to servitude. That's President Calvin Coolidge.